Hello and welcome to T-minus 12 from Fueling Endurance. I'm Alan McCubbin, I'm an accredited sports dietitian based in Melbourne and have almost two decades of experience working with runners, cyclists and triathletes to help them stay healthy and optimise their performance from complete beginners through to professional and Olympic athletes. And in this, the third of our special six-part podcast series, we'll catch up once again with our guest athlete Brett as he prepares for the 100km Ultra Trail Australia. We'll review Brett's progress with his sweat rate testing and gut training and get started on planning what he's going to eat the day before the race and on race morning. Now remember, if you're racing Ultra Trail Australia yourself or you have a different running, cycling or triathlon event coming up in May or June, you can follow along with us, implementing the same principles and strategies that Brett does to help you succeed at your event. And a shout out to Aid Station, who have come on board to provide Brett with a supply of the NARC products that will be provided by the race organisers at checkpoints during the race so that he can try them in training. The number one rule of sports nutrition is that you never ever try something on race day that you haven't practiced in training. So Brett being able to get his hands on these products has been really helpful. Aid Station is an online sports nutrition retailer and they stock a huge range of different sports nutrition brands, including those used in most of the main running, cycling and triathlon events here in Australia. With Aid Station, you don't have to buy a whole box of the same gel just to try one and see if you like it or not. You can buy a single drink mix, sachets, bars, gels, waffles, whatever it is, mixing and matching brands and flavours to get whatever you need. They'll hand pack whatever you've ordered into a single box and ship it right to your door. You can find them at aidstation.com.au and you can get 10% off your first Aid Station order by clicking the link in the episode description. T's and C's apply, limit one use of the code per customer. So with that all said, let's crack on and catch up with our guest athlete, Brett Kennedy. We start off reviewing what Brett's been up to over the last couple of weeks, particularly with his day-to-day diet and training progress. Now, if you haven't listened to it yet, you can go back to the first episode in this series to find out more details about what this involved in terms of putting together his day-to-day nutrition plan and see how that all came together. And now you'll hear how it's all going. We'll start off by reviewing where you're at the moment. So the things that we sort of covered off, obviously in the first session, we looked at just sort of your general day-to-day diet. You're still happy with how that's all kind of progressing?
That's still helpful and just providing that guidance. So,
Cool. And still plenty of like, and you're balancing that sort of energy and training versus, you know, body weight's not creeping up or anything like that.
No. And yeah, it's been good finding, had a really good last kind of 4 week block of interval type training and really come out the other side feeling good. So that's a win.
Yep, awesome. And then the other things obviously we looked at was trying the race nutrition products that are being provided on course, which are the NARC products. And obviously we had Aid Station come on board, which is great to provide you with some of that product. We did talk a little bit about that last week because I think you'd had a bit of an initial try of some of those products and you were familiar with some of them in the past. But how's that been going?
It's actually been a good experience because it's not something I probably would have done otherwise. I would have just probably, with what I trusted, just gone with that, but you know, having the opportunity to try it out and kind of, you know, your guidance, I suppose, in, you know, why that's a good idea. I was thinking during my long run on Sunday that I could actually see myself doing the first half of the race potentially on, you know, NARC watermelon drink mix, for instance. That's something we'll try on that as a, you might need this on race day, but now I'm kind of looking at it like, you know, that's actually starting to sit quite well.
Yeah, so it's kind of bumped from plan, maybe the plan B option to the plan A option.
Potentially, and it's, you know, it's quite a, it's not a sweet drink. It's watermelon flavor, but it's just quite a nice flavor, and even the consistency, like it actually works. I could see it for those morning hours until kind of the middle part of the day. If eating and drinking became difficult, I could see it being more difficult to consume for me, just based on knowing what I know about my preferences. But yeah, I actually. Yeah, really did enjoy it. Yeah, and I had the bars as well, which will be, I think they have on race day as well. I found the bar to actually be easier to eat and sit better than the waffles for me, which is good. Like it is a solid food. Like I did have to eat it while I was hiking uphill, and even then it was kept it in the wrapper and just was taking bites as I went. But it wasn't something that then kind of sat uncomfortably or had a closed eating kind of repeat on you or anything. It was really good. So, yeah,
awesome. And I think this is a really great, you know, lesson for listeners in terms of, as you said, you're trying out the Race Nutrition products, because sometimes we try things once and we're just like, oh, that's no good, I'm never going to have that again. Or, you know, I've used this for the last 5 years, I'm just going to stick to that. But of course, on race day, depending on the type of event you're doing, it's not always an option, particularly for some of the marathon events or triathlon events where you don't have crew to provide you whatever you want. You don't necessarily have drop bags, or you don't want to be overly reliant on drop bags. So you kind of, it's like, well, you either got to carry everything with you, which is a pain, or if you can get used to the product that's being provided on course by the aid stations, then you can use that. And that's a huge advantage, just to be able to rely on that and know that every time you turn up to an aid station, it's going to be there, and you don't have to worry about crew arriving on time. You don't have to worry about drop bags getting to the right place at the right time in the right condition, and all of that is kind of taken care of, essentially. So, yeah, I think it's great, and it doesn't always have to be necessarily elevated to kind of your plan A option. It can still be the plan B. That's fine, as long as you know it is a reasonable and acceptable plan B to you. But, yeah, if it ends up being plan A, and particularly in your case where you're doing 100Ks without crew, you know, that's going to be super important. So, yeah, I think it's definitely, as you said, been a really worthwhile exercise, and I can't emphasize enough for listeners as well how useful this exercise is to actually do. So that's awesome. The other things to review were what we introduced in the last episode, namely sweat rate testing to help us plan Brett's fluids for race day, as well as getting him started with some gut training, especially because nausea has been a significant issue for him in past events. So let's hear now how this part has been going since last time. We'll start with the sweat rate stuff. Have you been able to collect a little bit of data so far?
Yeah, I've been able to get a few sessions in. I have had a lot of tempo work, which we talked about. Yeah, what probably wasn't the best because working a bit harder. But yeah, a couple of long runs and just a kind of medium run. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, and we won't go into detail about that today because we'll have a look at that in the next session as we start to pull this together into a bit of a plan for race day. And then the third thing we looked at was the gut training side of things. How's that been going?
Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, just trying to consume a bit more pre-run and then bump up the numbers during a run. I remember at my long run on Easter Sunday, I was feeling quite full. I hadn't overindulged, but that's one run that stuck out where, yeah, I was definitely, the last kind of few Ks of that were uncomfortable, but bearable. But, you know, compared to when you're not so fueled up. So, but the good thing is that it's been quite a while, touch wood, since I've had any kind of energy low in any of my running, which used to be, you know, probably once a, like, I'd always have a gel in my shorts, which isn't a bad idea, but like, that was my emergency gel because I'd get 15 minutes into a run and I'd just start to bong. So I'd never run without one. So it's kind of been good that I've been finishing my runs with my gel still intact.
Yep. Excellent. And how's that been, like, running after, you know, shortly after eating something? Was that sort of uncomfortable at first? And have you noticed a change in how easy or difficult that is from a sort of a gut point of view?
It's not too bad. I guess it's probably just more, you know, you get a bit of like anxiety about how far am I going to be from a bathroom or something. But that's not been an issue. Again, touch wood. I do find like it is a bit of an adjustment those first few Ks. Just while I have the energy, it's just I sometimes have felt a bit sluggish, I guess, to get going, just slightly. But then you know, like I seem to settle into a really good level of just energy, like consistent energy, and like away. So
yeah, cool. Yeah. And as I think we said in the last podcast episode that we did, probably this serves two purposes. One is just getting the stomach used to being able to stretch and accommodate the volume of stuff that you might throw at it on race day. But the second part of that is the fact that when you stop at checkpoints, you often eat something a bit more substantial and then you have to run straight afterwards. So many people like, oh, I don't eat for 3 hours before I run. It's like, well, you're going to have to on race day. So, you know, you might as well get used to it now. So, yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll keep plugging away at those things, collecting some more sweat rate data over the next couple of weeks. And as I said, we'll pull that together and see how you go with the gut training side of things as well. It does take a few weeks to really see, you know, change happening in that space. So yeah, you may see further improvements in that in terms of it gets progressively more comfortable to run after eating, and the amount of carbs that you can get in during sort of increases as well. Where are you up to at the moment in terms of grams per hour?
It's been about 80 to 90. Yeah, been hovering in that mark. I would like to get some more gels. I bet I've been doing a lot of just real food at the moment with the nut products and that drink mix and just other little baked goods and things like that. Just real food. Yeah, I would like to get some more gels as well, just to help. Those precision hydration 90 gram gels, they're a pretty easy one to just sip away at two and just bump up that extra, 10, 20 carbs. So,
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, I mean, certainly if you're up to sort of 80 or 90 grams an hour of carbs now, that's fantastic. So you're still several weeks out from race day, and obviously we'll look at the plan next time, but you probably don't need to go much higher than that. So that's great that you're already getting to there and your gut's used to sort of digesting and absorbing that amount of carbohydrate while you're working, which is perfect. So the day-to-day eating is going well, and the gut training is coming along, and Brett's already got a few sessions worth of sweat rate data during runs that are similar to his expected race pace to help us understand his fluid needs. He'll keep working on that over the next few weeks, and as mentioned, we'll use the sweat rate data next time to start planning his foods and fluids for race day. But for the rest of this session, Brett and I shifted focus to look at what he's doing the day before and the morning of the race, and starting to put together a plan to try out in training for this aspect of his race preparation for UTA. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've done in the past and whether you feel it's been working well for you or not working well for you?
Yeah, I think if I think specifically to UTA, so for me it's about 12, 13 hours to get to Katoomba from where I live. So usually it's 2 days before we make the trip up, which is not, where you're living whatever you find along the way, it hasn't always been great. But yeah, the day before, in terms of extra carbohydrate or anything like that, I probably haven't had too much of a plan. The one thing I do currently, I might precision hydration again, a few extra electrolyte tablets or something the day before. Usually with the main meal the night before, I do try and just something that's more basically over that day, where I might be more focused on having kind of something with heavy protein balance. So I'll just try and lean more towards carbohydrate and not worry so much about the extra protein. Yeah, but certainly I'm probably not eating much more honestly than what I would normally. So not much of a grand plan. I just try and really stay hydrated. Like, I just put that in my focus, I suppose, into making sure I'm drinking and get those electrolytes in. But whether or not that's just what makes me feel comfortable about my preparation as opposed to what's actually effective. Yeah.
And this was actually something that I looked at during my PhD when we looked at sodium, and one of the things that we wanted to look at is the effect that the amount of sodium you consume has on your sweat composition. So, you can go out and do a sweat sodium test and work out how salty your sweat is. And we might talk about that next time when we look at your sweat rate data in terms of whether that is important or not for your situation. But one of the things I was particularly interested in is, a lot of athletes have that story where I load up, quote unquote, on sodium or electrolytes or whatever you want to call it, in the day or sometimes even 2 or 3 days before a race. And that's for a variety of reasons. I think for some people, they go out and do a sweat test and they're like, oh, I've got really salty sweat, therefore I need to load up on sodium in the days before the race because I'm going to lose so much on race day. Other people, it's because they have a history of cramping and they think that that's going to be important to help them prevent the cramping as well. We looked at this for two reasons. One was to say, okay, well, if you go out and do that sweat test and you've got really salty sweat, and then you freak out and take a whole bunch of electrolyte tablets and things in the days before a race, does that actually ironically make your sweat even saltier? And the answer is yes, but we deliberately did a 3-day intervention because that's kind of the period of time that athletes tend to do this over as a maximum. And we found that even if you kind of doubled your sodium intake, yes, your sweat became saltier, but it was only by about sort of 10 to 15% in 3 days. If you're doing it for a week, you would expect a bigger effect, but we didn't see a massive effect. Some people more than others. So that was part of it. But the other part is when you look, because we collected all their urine through those 3 days as well, so we could look at both the sodium inputs but also the sodium outputs in terms of urine losses in those days before they ran. And what we found was, as you kind of expect just sort of day-to-day in the general population, is the more salt you eat, the more salt you pee out, because the body's trying to keep it all in balance. And so, you know, you can load up on electrolytes the day before a race, but the vast majority of it just gets peed straight out again. A little bit of it may help retain a little bit more water, but it's not massive. It's no more than what you could achieve by just having like a lot of salt and fluid the morning of a race. And I would say for ultra distance events, that extra bit of hydration is not really necessary anyway, because the ability to access and drink fluid in an ultra is not usually a limiting factor. We see a lot of cases of overhydration rather than dehydration in ultras, whereas something like a marathon in really hot conditions where you've got limited access to fluid, you're working at a pace where it's hard to tolerate the fluid. It's hard, you know, you have to slow down a lot to access the cups. You don't get much fluid each time. It's hard not to choke on it when you're working that hard. That's a situation where maybe that pre-event hyperhydration, you know, trying to start more hydrated than you would at baseline, might be useful. But for ultras, I really don't see the value in doing that. So, yeah, I don't think for me electrolyte supplementation is really that important in the days before an ultra. And just in terms of, you know, retaining the fluid that you're drinking, just the nutrients in the food that you're eating, and because you're probably eating more food than what you normally would, that is going to help retain that fluid anyway. And there's some good studies looking at that now as well. It's not going to be harmful. So if you want to do it, or you just, it encourages you to drink more, or encourages you to drink fluid that's going to give you carbohydrate as well, then I wouldn't say don't do it, but I don't think you have to go out of your way to do it, or to go, I have to have exactly, you know, this many milligrams of sodium or anything like that in the 24 hours before an event. It doesn't seem to be necessary, because your kidneys are going to kind of take care of all those sort of checks and balances anyway. So as much as we like to try and trick the system's pretty hard to trick.
Yeah.
So that's the sodium side of things. And likewise, fluid-wise, people often get really focused on the hydration the day before a race. And obviously, you don't want to come into a race dehydrated, or, you know, a little bit under where you would normally sit. So, you know, you can kind of see the value in that. Again, I don't think you need to go crazy about it, though, because you do see people that just load up and load up and load up on fluid, and then they spend their whole night waking up to go to the toilet the night before a race. And that's not helpful either, because that little bit of extra hydration, well, what's that going to do to you versus having your sleep interrupted the night before a race and you've been up two or three times overnight? It's probably going to be far more detrimental than any effect of, you know, hydration being maybe 5% off where it would ideally be. So again, like, you know, fluid, obviously you don't want to not drink anything, but you don't need to go crazy, you know, drinking liters and liters of fluid either the day before a race. And I think for me, the fluid would also come back to, it's a vehicle to get carbohydrate into the body. When you're trying to get more carbs in, fluid's an easy way to do it. And so from that perspective, often I'm using fluid for that purpose. And so it's not about, you know, I have to be, you know, super hydrated, but it's more about I have to try and get the carbs in, and that's the easiest way to do it without having to eat all this solid food and feel super full as well. Okay. So it sounds like from what you're describing before, you probably haven't had a particular target in mind of like, I'm aiming for this much grams of carbs or anything the day before.
Yeah, no, just no rhyme or reason to anything. Just yes, a few little habits here and there.
Yeah. And look, I think ultra distance events are the tricky one, because they start to come into this gray area of, is carb loading actually beneficial? And there's arguments for and against this. We did a podcast episode years ago now, I think it was like episode 9A off the top of my head, where we had this discussion with a researcher in this kind of area. And I guess I probably hedge my bets a little bit in terms of, you know, increasing the carbs, but not going to the extreme that I would with maybe a professional road cyclist or a, you know, a sub 3 hour marathon runner or something like that, where you would really focus on that carb loading. So I probably wouldn't go to that extreme, but I probably would increase the carbs, you know, above what you probably eat on a day-to-day basis. So typically for carbo loading, you're looking at anywhere from sort of 7 or 8 grams of carbs per kilo of body weight for that day before at the lower end of the spectrum, and then as high as maybe 12 grams for, particularly for male athletes, at the upper end of that spectrum. So I would probably shoot towards the lower end for this kind of situation. But having said that, I mean, 8 grams per kilo is still a lot of carbohydrate. We're looking at, you know, up to maybe 700 grams of carbs the day before. So your current day-to-day plan goes up to about 550, and that would include the carbs you're having during some of your long run sessions, which obviously the day before a race, you're not doing that. So it is obviously going to be quite a big increase in terms of the carbs that you're eating because you're not training as well that day before. So there's a few different ways you can kind of go about achieving that without feeling like you just, I describe it like you're pouring concrete into your stomach. That's often what it feels like when you're just trying to eat that much food in a day. And a lot of people kind of run into trouble with carb loading. Either one, they have no idea how much carbohydrate they need and they end up getting nowhere near enough. Or they set out with these grand plans to get, you know, 8 or 10 grams per kilo or whatever it is. And then they get to 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and they're just completely stuffed. They can't eat another thing more. They just feel absolutely rotten, bloated, gut issues, and, you know, completely full. And then it's just a real struggle. So it's how do you kind of achieve those things without those kind of sensations that you don't want? So the first thing I'd say here is prioritize carbohydrate over all your other nutrients on that day. So, you know, it doesn't really matter how big or small the protein serves are as long as you're getting the carbohydrate in. So there's no point sitting down to eat a whole chicken breast or a big steak or something like that the night before a race because it's not going to help in any way, but it's just going to make it harder to get the carbs in. The other one is the fat content because, again, the fat is going to be quite filling. And it's not contributing carbohydrate, obviously. So that's another one where looking at the fat content of meals and trying to reduce that down as much as you can just helps with all of this as well. And that's one where I think, you know, both the protein, but particularly the fat is where your accommodation choices become really important when you're looking at that day before a race. Because if you're going out to a restaurant to eat, you don't have control over those things, how much fat is added to food. And generally speaking, when you eat out, chefs will add more butter or olive oil or whatever it is, some source of fat to your meals than you would probably choose to or want to the day before race. And so that's just going to fill you up even more relative to the amount of carbohydrate that you're getting. The next thing to think about, so we've talked about fat and protein, is the fiber content. And this is not just in terms of, you know, getting the carbs in on the day, but this has implications the next day in terms of gut comfort while you're running as well. And we'll come back and talk about this a bit more over the next couple of weeks or so. But, you know, fiber hangs around in your gut for a period of time. And that can cause problems on, you know, not only in making you feel full at the time, but in terms of the next day. So when that fiber is in your gut, it's going to pass through undigested into your large intestine. That does a couple of things while we're running. Firstly, it sends a feedback signal. It's called the ileal brake. So ileum is the bit of your small intestine at the end before it becomes the large intestine. So when you get fiber or other sort of undigested or unabsorbed things getting down to that point at the end of the small intestine, it sends a signal back to the stomach to say, hang on, slow down here. And so it actually slows down the emptying of your stomach. So you can imagine in an ultra distance event, that's the last thing you want is the stomach to actually slow down its emptying of the gels and drinks and things that are still going in. So having fiber at the end of your small intestine is not desirable from that perspective. The next thing is that once it goes into the large intestine, that's where the bacteria are going to feast on that fiber and produce gas as a side effect of that. And that can obviously increase your risk of those sort of lower type gut issues during exercise. And the third thing is just having bulk of stuff down there increases the risk of, you just said before, like going for a run and needing to go to the toilet straight away. If you've got a relatively empty bowel, the risk of that is going to be a lot lower also. So For all of those reasons, we try and generally minimize the amount of fiber that you're having in that day or so before a race as well. So all of those things can be helpful, and that starts to make it easier to get those carbohydrates in. The next thing I'd be thinking about is your fluid can also be a delivery vehicle for carbohydrate. Some people use, you know, your fruit juices, cordials, soft drinks, those kind of things. I tend to prefer not to, just because you get to that point of, it's not even in the race, but flavor fatigue, like sweetness overload. By the time you're having like liters of this stuff, it just gets to the point where it's just sweet and sticky and you're just completely over it. Likewise, I generally wouldn't go down the route of using sports drink for your carb loading, simply because you're going to be drinking it for the next 15, 20 hours the next day. You don't want to be sick of it before you've even started the race. So again, I tend to shy away from that a little bit. The one thing I would generally do with the majority of athletes I work with, not everyone, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but for the majority of athletes, is just to use plain maltodextrin. You can put heaps of it into a bottle, one sort of normal kind of drink bottle, 600-700 mils or whatever it is. You can fit about 80 to 100 grams of maltodextrin into one of those. And it's pure carbohydrate, so that's like 80 to 100 grams of carbs in one bottle. Now, that bottle, you know, maltodextrin doesn't really have any flavor. It doesn't really taste sweet at all, so it doesn't really taste like anything. So you can put that in, and it's not sweetness overload like you would get with juice or cordial or soft drink. And then if you want to add flavor to it, you can, but you can add whatever flavor you want, and you can add as much or as little flavor as you want as well. So you could add lemon juice. Some people would do that just so it's not super sweet. Some people might add an electrolyte tablet. Some people might add, you know, just a splash of cordial or Ribena or something like that. Some people might add a splash of orange juice. Like, it's totally up to you what you want to use, but it means that you can kind of, again, control not only what it tastes like, but how strong that flavor is. And then with those bottles, I would usually get people to sip on them between, like, maybe have one in the morning between breakfast and lunch, and you just kind of sip away. So it's not like you have to down the whole thing in 10 minutes or anything. You just sort of work your way through it. And then the same in the afternoon, you can kind of just drip feed it in across the afternoon between lunch and dinner. So if you did two bottles of that, you could get like an easily an extra 200 grams of carbs into your day without having to eat a single extra bit of solid food. So that's just a super simple way to do it. And I think from memory, you had some maltodextrin at home?
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, that's a simple one. And if we think about the meals, the final thing I'd talk about, in addition to reducing the fat, the fiber, the protein content, is actually the FODMAP content of the food. So just for listeners, FODMAPs is an acronym. It's basically a whole bunch of fermentable carbohydrates, so starches and sugars. There's a few different varieties of them, and basically they're ones that humans don't digest and absorb well, or in some cases at all, and so they act a little bit more like fiber. And so the things that I talked about before, in terms of it feeding back to slow down the emptying of your stomach, but also then being fermented and causing no gas and things lower down in your large intestine, that can all happen with FODMAPs as well as it can with fiber. So the most common FODMAPs, I think, that cause people a bit of grief are probably the ones that we tend to eat in the largest quantity. So wheat is often a culprit for a lot of people. So people say, oh, it's gluten, but it's usually actually the FODMAP content in wheat. And so particularly in the context of your carbs the day before a race, that's things like bread and pasta and certain breakfast cereals and things like that. Things that people would commonly eat in this situation that can potentially cause some drama, not only on that day just in terms of gut comfort, but also, you know, carrying through to the next day as well. And there's been some research, my colleagues at Monash have done that research, not me personally, to show that, yeah, carb loading with a low FODMAP diet can reduce those symptoms quite a bit compared to a higher FODMAP diet. Some people can eat those things fine and they have no problem on race day. But if I'm ever not sure about that, I usually sort of take a lower risk approach and sort of say, well, let's try and minimize down the FODMAP content of what you're eating the day before. So in that case, for main meals, it might be leaning towards things like rice rather than pasta or bread or something like that. For breakfast, if you're a breakfast cereal type person, then it might be things like rice bubbles or cornflakes, which are going to tick the boxes of both low in fiber but also low FODMAP because they're based on rice or corn, as opposed to like your Nutri-Grain type things that have wheat in them, or things like oats, which are low FODMAP but they're high fiber. So yeah, all of those things I tend to put together into a bit of a plan. Does that sound like that would work from your perspective in terms of that kind of low fiber breakfast cereal in the morning, rice-based lunch and dinner, and then the drinks in between?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I can eat pretty simple if I need to, because I know there's a purpose to it. I think the drinks are a really good suggestion, particularly because depending on how involved you get when you're in Katoomba, the day before you gear check, going to get signed in and get everything, like that can take, you know, 45 minutes, an hour of waiting depending on what time you go, and even just checking out the little village and they've got the 22 on as well, so there's plenty of people around, there's plenty to see. Just being able to kind of hit some water and some carbs just while you're there away from your accommodation or shops or whatever, yeah, like that's really helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's a super important point as well. And it, obviously, it's slightly different on each event and depending on the sport. Like your triathletes, you've got to check in all your gear into transitions and things the day before. And if you have to leave your accommodation and travel a fair way away from that to be in that situation, you've got to take things with you. Otherwise, you know, 4 or 5 hours can go past and you haven't eaten or drank anything. And then all of a sudden, you're way behind on your carb sort of targets that you're aiming for the day. So yeah, having things that are portable I think is super important. And as you said, the drinks are an easy one from that perspective because you just carry a bottle with you, which you probably would have done anyway, but it's just what's in that bottle that makes the difference. Cool. And so basically what we'll do is I'll just put together a plan around that sort of aims to hit that kind of high 600s to 700 ish gram mark of carbohydrate, and we'll just get you to practice that, you know, maybe the day before a long one of your long weekend runs or something, just to see, one, that you like the combination of foods from just a taste point of view, two, it's not too filling or you're not too, you know, gut issue wise, any problems there, and three, that like it feels good when you're actually running the next day as well. So yeah, that's important. One is to obviously have all of these things, you always want to practice them before you get to race day, and the sooner you practice them the better, because if it doesn't go to plan, at least you've still got time to kind of revise it and try again. Okay, and so then the meal on the morning of the event. What's kind of been your routine, not just with UTA, but I guess any event that you're doing? It's early-ish morning start, not as early as some events, but early enough. What's kind of been your routine in the mornings, and how does sort of nutrition fit into that routine?
If I think about the last few events I've done, you know, I've got like a little banana bread slice, something like that, a Cliff Bar perhaps, maybe some banana, but just like they're really, it's kind of that series of food that I might choose from, just in carbs. And yeah, I'll sip on just like a one tablet of electrolyte, which again, there's no, I'm not trying to achieve a certain figure or loading. It's just, yeah, there's a little bit of nice flavor to it. It's just better than just plain water. Like I have that with my breakfast just to bring it all together. Feel like I'm doing something positive towards my day. Yeah. So that's probably for my last, yeah, handful of races, it would be fall within that kind of ballpark.
Yeah. And so I think from what you're saying here is like the Cliff Bar or whatever it is at that time, that essentially becomes breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of that has been born out of actually not having the appropriate accommodation to be able to be a bit more flexible. So these little things, banana bread slice, Cliff Bar, banana, like it's stuff I can get at the shop, doesn't need to be stored anywhere special.
Yeah, and particularly because I think you've said in the past, like your accommodation's been quite a drive from the actual event venue, and so you're probably having to leave quite early, and so you'd have to have breakfast super early if you were sitting down and eating, you know, a bowl of cereal or, you know, whatever it was. And so it's then the portability, it sounds like that's what you've been aiming for.
Yes, yeah, it was at least a 45-minute drive just to the car, you know, just to get to Katoomba and then find parking after that and whatnot. So, yeah, having something that I could eat on the drive as opposed to having to smash it before the drive was valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think, you know, what you eat the morning of an event is a very personal thing. Like some people can eat a roast dinner and go and do their event no problem. Other people don't like more than a few sips of a drink or something. So a lot of it is, I guess, about finding what works for you. Obviously, you've done most of the hard work the day before in terms of getting those carbs in. So it's not like you're sitting there desperately trying to smash all these carbs in. Otherwise, you're going to go in underfueled. Like you're going to be well-fueled regardless. It will top up a little bit because obviously your body will have used a bit of those carbs overnight while you're asleep, but not massive quantities. So yeah, it's, I guess, just towing that line between convenience, comfort, not being overly hungry or overly full on the start line. It's the only thing I'd say around this, and whether it's worth trying something different, I'm not sure, but you could potentially, is just the FODMAP content. Obviously, banana bread's going to be wheat, like flour based, so that's going to be a bit of a FODMAP hit there. Cliff bars, there'll be a bit of FODMAPs in those as well. So that would be the only thing I'd suggest there. Otherwise, I think that approach is fine. I mean, if you could get gluten-free banana bread, something like that would be ideal. Just trying to think if there's anything else that you could use. I guess because your accommodation is a little bit closer this time, you could go for something else, whether that was, you know, like a slice of gluten-free toast or something. But yeah, I'm just thinking about reducing down that FODMAP content, keeping in mind that obviously gut issues has been one of the things that you've had struggles with in the past, if we can try and minimize the risk that that might be playing into it. We don't know for sure if it is, but if we can minimize the risk of that, that's probably not a bad thing necessarily. So maybe have a look around at, you know, even just locally at stuff you've got available there, and maybe have an experiment with that stuff beforehand and see what you can find that might be a bit lower FODMAP but still kind of meets your personal preference towards something that's relatively small and portable that would sort of all come together on race day.
Would just like another bottle of maltodextrin be an option?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, as long as, I mean, some people don't like to sit on a start line and feel physically hungry, like they haven't eaten that morning. But if you're not that person, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, that could be an option as well. Yep.
Yeah, and I have started races before without anything in the morning because I don't want to be on the start line with something in my stomach. I don't think that was the best approach, but at the same time, what I do currently or have been doing is just no rhyme or reason. And I feel like if I actually had an approach where I did carb load the day before, I would have the confidence the next day. You know, I test it out, obviously, but would feel a lot more confident that I've actually done something intentional and proactive, that my morning routine could be adjusted to suit that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, maybe try that and see how that goes. So do you practice that carb load the day before and then that same drink that you just mentioned there on the morning before your long run on a weekend, just over the next weekend or two, see how it goes. And so that's Brett's homework for the next couple of weeks, continuing the gut training and collecting sweat rate data, but also trialing his nutrition plan for the day before and the morning of the race, and he'll do that before a long run day. And this will all come together in our next session. So that's our third session with Brett all done. In the next episode, it's going to be a big one because we're going to pull together all of these different elements into Brett's draft race plan for him to trial in training. Now remember, if you've got a race coming up around May or June, you might like to go through the same steps that we've just discussed today with Brett in preparation for your event. And if you want more details about eating the day before a race, including whether or not carb loading is actually necessary for you, and then how to do it effectively if the answer is yes, you can go back and listen to episodes 9A with Dr. Jose Areta and episode 9B with elite mountain biker Karen Hill. The next episode of Fueling Endurance will be part B of the question, can my supplement really cause a doping positive? And we're going to be joined by Aussie distance runner Cassie Fian, who found out the hard way that the answer to that question is unequivocally yes. Cassie shares her story about testing positive to a banned substance that was in a supplement that she took, how that came about, the lessons that she learnt, and what other athletes can take away from her experience. A reminder also, if you have a question that you'd like answered on the podcast, you can contact us at Fueling Endurance on Instagram, Facebook, or Threads, or Fuel Endurance on X. And remember that there's now already 75 previous questions that have been answered on the podcast. So if you are new, welcome. You may like to go and check out the back catalogue to see if there's something there that will be helpful to you. If you want to be notified every time a new episode is available, you can hit subscribe on the podcast app that you're listening to this on. And if you're interested in getting your hands on the Fueling Endurance ebook, which provides written articles covering the first 2 years of the podcast, you can get your hands on that through fuelingendurance.com or for the Kindle version via Amazon. But that's it for today's episode. Hopefully it's been useful to your own race preparation. And we'll see you back here next week with our discussion with Cassie Fian.